Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Now, the definition of paedophilia is a sexual attraction to children under the age of 12. And new approaches to research and treatment for people who are paedophiles are now distinguishing between paedophiles who don't act on their fantasies and those who do. We're going to hear now from one man who is a paedophile. We would warn viewers that we know children are on holidays and this next, I suppose, 15 minutes will be dealing with the issue of paedophilia without too much graphic detail. But we're going to hear now from one man who is a paedophile, who desperately wants to avoid abusing children.
I was very aware of the way that I was feeling was wrong. At the same time, aware of the fact that I didn't feel I could do anything about that. You have to keep everything within yourself and not show anybody who you really are, because you've got this dirty, dark secret.
One man describing his own experiences. Now, the latest approaches to treating paedophiles emphasise preventive therapy, encouraging potential offenders to come forward. In a moment, I'm going to be speaking to psychotherapist Juliet Grayson, the co-founder of STOPSO, that's the specialist treatment organisation of the prevention of sexual offences in the UK. But first, one of the most innovative approaches is Germany's Dunkelfeld project. And I'm joined now by Berlin-based BBC journalist Damien McGuinness. Damien, thank you for joining us this morning. Can you describe the Dunkelfeld project? How exactly does it work?
Well, this is a series of clinics all over Germany. There are 11 centres spread out in Germany, and it's a series of therapies, really, which is a sort of cognitive behavioural therapy. And so what that means is that patients would either have individual therapy with a therapist, or they would even have group therapy. And as you mentioned, this is for men who have an attraction for children, some of whom may have committed child abuse in the past, but others won't have done. And this is what's interesting about this therapy, because it's focusing a lot of the time on men, or even women as well, who have an attraction to children, and they are unknown to the authorities because they haven't committed an offence, they haven't committed child abuse, but they have this attraction and they don't want to commit an offence, which is why the therapists say this is a form of prevention which really aims to stop the abuse in the first place, to stop the first offence happening in a way.
And I suppose a key point of Dunkelfeld is that a paedophile is not necessarily a child abuser. They may have the inclination, but they may not act out on it.
Yes, that's right. And that's what's a little bit confusing in the mainstream press. We often bring the two terms together. What's also interesting is that not all child abuse is carried out by paedophiles, because sometimes, this is what therapists have told me, child abuse has other root causes.
Are you talking child sex abuse there?
Yes, child sex abuse can sometimes have issues of to do with power and control. It's connected to violence. So it's a very complicated issue which does affect a lot of a higher proportion of the population, you'd think. And when I've talked to experts here in Berlin, according to some studies, people think that possibly as high as 3 to 5% of men could at some point in their lives feel a sexual attraction to prepubescent children, which is quite a shocking statistic.
3 to 5%? I mean, you're talking huge numbers of people. Can you tell me, I mean, the Dunkelfeld project, it's quite different to other projects we'd know about, in that it isn't people who've been convicted by the courts and sent on for help. People come forward themselves. How are they finding these people?
Well, that's one of the most interesting things about this project, because there are adverts on German television, there are posters up, saying to people, well, if you have this attraction, there is help out there. So I'll describe one ad to give you an example. One of the ads shows a young man in his probably around about the age of 30, very normal looking bloke, gets on a train. He sees a young prepubescent boy who looks about 10 years old getting on. You hear this sort of music, which indicates that this man's heartbeat is racing faster. The man looks uncomfortable. Then there's a tagline saying, do you love children more than you'd like to? There is help available. And it has the contact details of these clinics. Now, in Germany, this isn't controversial, because the idea is that you're reaching out to people who might commit an offence in the future and you want to prevent that happening. But outside of Germany, this has been seen as controversial, and some experts in the field sort of worry that this is almost bringing down the bar.
Normalising paedophilia almost.
Exactly. That is the criticism which has been raised to this to this approach.
Well, stay with me, Damien. I mean, it's a really fascinating project. As I say, I'm also joined on the line now by psychotherapist Juliet Grayson, who co-founded the Specialist Treatment Organisation for the Prevention of Sexual Offences in the UK. Juliet, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. Can I ask you, I mean, Damien's saying there that it's estimated in some studies that between 3 and 5% of men could at some point in their lives be sexually attracted to children. Do therapists understand what paedophilia is at this point? I mean, is it an aberrant behaviour or desire that people are born with, or is it something that is a response to trauma or something happening over the course of a person's life?
Well, that's a really interesting question. There is more and more research being shown around paedophilia in particular that shows that it's even possible that something that happens in the womb may affect people and make them more likely to have a paedophilic predisposition.
Like what?
So paedophiles are more likely to be left-handed than right-handed. They're more likely to be shorter. There are various different things that they're now discovering. The white matter in the brain is more likely to be thicker in a paedophile than it is in a member of the general population. So there are various things that are coming to light that are maybe more hardwired than we like to think about. So that's one aspect of it. But as Damien was saying, then you get childhood experiences which may make people act out and become a child molester. So most sex offenders have trauma in their history that may be sexual abuse, or it may be another kind of trauma. It can even be something as simple as a beloved grandfather dying. And there seems to be a susceptibility around about the age of 8 or 9 for boys, 7 for girls, which is when the sexual template comes online. And if something happens then that's challenging, if your parents divorce at that age, if there's a nasty death in the family, if there's violence, And it seems that there's something particularly at that age that if a trauma, and it doesn't have to be a sexual trauma, if a trauma happens at that age, it can predispose people later on to act out with children.
And Juliet, can I ask you, from the research, I mean, obviously it's in its early days, but are you saying that if a child of 8 or 9 is subjected to some kind of trauma, it will awaken an underlying tendency towards paedophilia, or can it create paedophilia at that point?
What I would say is, firstly, let me say I'm not an expert in this. So this is what I'm reading and what I'm, you know, the research is telling me. Secondly, I would say not so much paedophilia, but general sexual offences. So it seems that a lot of people who commit sexual offences of all kinds, and with STOPSO, we cover people who are voyeurs, exhibitionists, rapists, we cover the whole spectrum of sexual offending, as well as paedophilia and child pornography.
Well, Juliet, to bring you on to, I suppose, your area of expertise, which is the treatment of sex offenders, but specifically on child sex offenders or paedophiles, can treatment work? Is there evidence to say that treatment can change a person's behaviour?
Yes.
How effective is it?
There's research and evidence that shows that even the group programs, which are not particularly tailor-made to individuals, have between a 27% and a 42% reduction in reoffending rates. So if you do that either alongside or you give people individual therapy as well, then our experience is that, and we haven't yet got research to back that up because we've not been going long enough, but our experience is that, yes, people are able to change their behaviour and manage their behaviour.
And so, how do you treat them?
It's a question of looking at what the early trauma may have been. So looking at that and dealing with whatever that trauma was so that you help them to come to terms with it in a different kind of way. It's a question of looking at their thinking styles and thinking patterns and helping them to be aware. I mean, this sounds a bit simplistic, but recently I've been on a diet and, you know, wanting to stop eating chocolate in the evening. And it's really fascinating how hard it is just for me to stop eating chocolate. And I say I won't do it in the morning, and 5 days out of seven I don't, and then one day a week I find myself eating chocolate again. And I'm really grateful that eating chocolate isn't an illegal activity. Because if I had a temptation and a tendency to do something that was by its very nature illegal, it's challenging to change that behaviour, but it is possible. And we know that psychotherapy works. There's lots and lots of research that shows that psychotherapy works.
And are you aiming, Juliet, to stop people with a sexual attraction to children acting out on that attraction, or are you aiming to get rid of the sexual attraction they feel towards children?
There's research showing that the sexual attraction towards children is, in some people, quite hardwired. So it's a sexual orientation, like being homosexual, rather than something that can be changed. And for those people, then it needs to be managed rather than changed. So they have to find a way to come to terms. And as Damien was saying, 3 to 5% of the population will have paedophilic thoughts and tendencies at some stage. So many of those people are already managing their attraction to children and are not acting out. And it's very, very possible for someone to be a non-offending paedophile, for someone not to become a child molester.
Damien,
in Germany, in the Project Dunkelfeld, they say you're not responsible for your sexual desires, but you are responsible for your sexual behaviour. And that's what we're wanting to do, is to help people have tools and techniques to be able to manage their sexual behaviour.
And it's interesting then, I mean, the society's attitude to paedophiles would very much drive people underground. I mean, nobody's going to say to you at a party, oh, well, I'm really working hard on dealing with my sexual desire for children. I mean, is this, do you think this is part of the problem, that these people are not able to be open about what the help they need?
Absolutely. And I've got an email here from a guy who wrote to us saying, I hate myself for being like this and for not having the decency and courage to destroy myself. I've locked myself away for years, keeping away from danger, and I'm writing this and hoping that there's someone left who can help me. I have a bottle of pills beside me. I'm desperate, and I'm considered a disgusting monster. Someone please tell me how it moves on from here. So we are dealing with people who really want to change, who really are taking responsibility for their behaviour and recognising that it's not right, and we're able to, you know, help them move in the right direction and make changes that are life-lasting.
Damien, to bring you back in on this, I mean, what are the results that are coming out of the Dunkelfeld project? How is it working? Is it working to stop offenders from reoffending? Because some of the people taking part have already offended.
Yes, that's right. And the fact that some have already offended is probably the most controversial thing about this project, because because of patient confidentiality laws in Germany, it means that if someone has already offended, they can talk openly to the therapist, and the therapist not only doesn't have to report to the police, they can't report to the police. And that's a very different situation, certainly in the UK, where I'm not sure about Ireland.
You know, it's mandatory reporting in Ireland, all right.
Mandatory reporting, so it's the same situation. And what therapists here in Germany say is that this undermines the whole concept, because on the one hand, it means that people who want help are too nervous to approach a therapist, because they feel, even if they haven't committed an offence, they feel just having these thoughts and talking about them might get them reported. And on the other hand, therapists say you can't actually conduct a full therapy if you don't go into the past behaviour which you want to change and not do again. But it is controversial because some people would say, well, you should report every past offence. So that's one thing. But it was interesting listening to Juliet, because having talked to people here, and men who have gone through the therapy themselves, they very much back up what Juliet was saying, that the idea is that it's about acceptance, they've told me. One particular man said to me that it was very painful for him to acknowledge that he was a paedophile. He had to stand in front of the mirror. On the one hand, he says, what sort of a monster am I? On the other, he says, well, I'm a paedophile. That's who I am. That's never going to change. That was his opinion. But it doesn't mean I have to become a child abuser. So as Juliet rightly said, the idea is about your actions define who you are, not your feelings. And as to the success rate, one therapist I talked to said, well, she was convinced there is a high success rate. It's very hard to judge. But what she said they do at the beginning of the therapy, they carry out a very in-depth questionnaire which investigates attitudes towards sexual attraction to children, such as the idea of consent. You know, can it ever be consensual? The attitudes are one thing at the beginning of the therapy. At the end of the therapy, they carry out the same questionnaire, which is very in-depth and very hard to fake. And the attitudes have completely changed in the vast majority of cases, such as, for example, the idea of consent.
That they understood there's never consent with a child.
Yes, yes.
Julia, to bring you back in, I mean, it is a very controversial area, this. I know in Ireland we have mandatory reporting. And, you know, if you look back over history, had there been mandatory reporting, you would think that maybe many children in this country could have been spared the horror of child sexual abuse. Is this something you think needs to be re-examined at this point? Or is this maybe, from the point of view of anyone listening who has been a victim of child sexual abuse, it may seem to be very focused on the abuser, not adequately focused on their victims, if they're not reported?
I think that there are various different strategies. So I think we need to prime children to seek effective protection, and we do need to prime adults to deliver effective protection, and that may include mandatory reporting. But it's really important that psychotherapists and psychologists and psychiatrists don't get included in that, so that we can continue to work with people as we are at the moment. In the UK, there's no legal duty for a therapist in private practice to report at the moment, so it's an ethical choice. If someone works in the NHS, then they have a duty by their contract of employment, but it's still not a legal duty. And I think it's really important that we maintain this law that we have in the UK, which isn't as clear as it is in Germany, where it's illegal for the therapist to break client confidentiality. So they're not allowed to report. In the UK, we are allowed to report, and we would be supported in that, but it's an ethical choice.
Okay.
So each individual therapist will make a risk assessment and decide whether this needs to be reported or not.
Okay, well, we're going to leave it there for now, but thank you both very much indeed for joining us, at psychotherapist Juliet Grayson and BBC journalist Damien McGuinness.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.